If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
RightStuff.biz.
Oh, hey, Goy. Herschel here. Are you listening to a free fag episode of The Daily Shower? Do you need a small personal loan so you can afford a paywall subscription? I may be able to help you out. For the very low price of just $10 a month, you can listen to Mike finish his talking points without annoying promotional bits like this one. Log on to therightstuff.biz/paywall and pick the payment option that best suits your white man's agency level. E-checks, money order by mail, or cryptocurrency. Support TRS's efforts in shutting down yids like me.
It is The Daily Shower. 1,042.
This is the good stuff. The right stuff.
None of our race are still being born with the right stuff.
We're ready to go. We're ready.
Okay. So, this very important story came to my attention this morning.
I know what it is.
And we have to talk about the time that Fuentes raped a 10-year-old girl.
Wait, what?
A girl? That's not possible. There's no way. There's no way he raped a girl.
Gerson Fuentes, an illegal immigrant from Mexico.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Raped a 10-year-old girl.
That makes more sense.
So Fuentes raped a 10-year-old girl.
Okay. I see what you did there.
And we need to discuss this issue. So, no, but I actually do have a point to make about this. So, I saw this story, and this is something I had missed in the abortion controversy because I wasn't
I did hear about this story. Yeah, this story is.
So this woman doctor, this obviously a libtard doctor in Indiana, performed an abortion on a 10-year-old girl. And the story was that this girl had to travel from Ohio to Indiana to get the abortion because after they overturned Roe v. Wade, some law, like a trigger law, went into effect in Ohio banning all abortions. After 6 weeks, no exceptions
right.
for rape or incest. And so this girl was supposedly past that 6 week mark and she needed the abortion or whatever. So she goes to Indiana and this libtard doctor performed it. And in the time, Indiana's law was no abortions after 22 weeks. They have since changed it. I think they also have a no abortions before 6 weeks law, but I don't know what kind of exceptions are or are not built in. But the one of the reasons why a lot of abortion referendums, when they're put before populations, lose, even in conservative states, is these maximalist lack of any kind of exception for rape, incest, or medical necessity, which are things that people see, generally speaking, people see as reasonable exceptions to the rule, but they can't, because of their way they think about it, they don't acknowledge these as that there can be an exception to a moral absolute rule, right? So that's one thing. But the other thing is, so the thing that what happened, though, is so this doctor talked about this during this. She didn't name the girl, but she talked about the case during the abortion controversy, right, a year ago. And what conservatives did was they said, that's not true. We don't believe you. We think you're making that up for political reasons.
Hmm.
And of course, they looked like idiots because racists will tell you, happened. And
that's kind of their brand.
A beaner.
Conservatives looking, that's on brand for conservatives look like idiots. So.
Right. But it's like, you know, when this doctor comes out and says this, she said it to the media and then it got picked up by the congressional Democrats who were using the media report. And then Joe Biden mentioned it, it became this whole football. And even in media reports, like, in like National Review and Wall Street Journal, they were saying this story probably isn't true. Like it seems like a just so story told just right when this bill is happening. Suddenly we have this. I'm like, no, because there's like 500 such cases a year. I'm surprised it's that low.
I didn't know there was.
And of course, it was an illegal immigrant named Gerson Fuentes.
Gerson.
And of course, Gerson. Yeah, I know, right? And of course, So this is where the race thing comes in. Like, if you don't have a racial viewpoint, you're going to get this shit wrong. You're going to end up being wrong about things. Liberals are wrong, too, because they don't want to talk about the race angle, but you know it's a race thing. And, of course, he rapes his stepdaughter or something like that, because the mother is out there saying, no, I don't believe everyone lying about him. He's they're trashing him. I support him. So this is very typical Beaner shit, right? Mm. These are Beaner problems. And my thing to conservatives is, look, if you don't like this, then you need to start talking about ending immigration and sending these people back. But you don't want to do that.
No, we're not.
Because you think that these Beaners are all fucking conservative Catholics. But no, this happens in these homes, in these households. This is actually not rare. I don't want to say it's like common, but it's not that rare.
What, certainly like Beaners and like underage sex stuff? Yeah, it's very common, especially
it's very, very
shit.
Common. And particularly things like a single mom and then the boyfriend rapes the daughter. This happens in Beaner households a lot.
Yeah.
And I know this from, there's certain numbers on it. I've also got some anecdotal reasons
they
for leaving it.
They don't really have any, like, they don't have any cultural like prohibitions against like young pregnant girls. Like we sort of, well, at least we used to really have one. We have MTV's 16 and Pregnant.
Yeah.
Things like that. That's actually a pretty dated reference at this point, but still that was part of the thing.
Damn, right?
You know, we used to have this sort of, we look down on like, shit, Jews pivoted to our culture to like, what are you doing being pregnant before 30? Why are you pregnant before 35? Why aren't you just letting your eggs dry up and riding cock carousels?
Well, that was a funny dichotomy, but, that at the same time they are pushing that message on whites. Like, I remember in my high school, there was actually a support group for pregnant girls that were pregnant. I'm serious. They had their own, and it was, they were all like fucking Beaners and blacks, right? There was no white girls or Jewish girls in there. Particularly not white girls, but like, yeah.
Wasn't there like a John Hughes tier sort of like romantic comedy dramedy movie in the 80s about being like a pregnant high schooler and it's all white kids? So it was like this, it was like a sob story, kind of. It was like an overcoming this horrible thing that happened where it's like, Beaners, like, nah, Beaners is like, oh, yeah, pregnant.
Well, I know. Well, it became like a status symbol among them. Like they bragged about it and stuff. And this was like horrifying to white parents to see. And they were mad. Even like liberal white parents were like mad that the school was like sort of encouraging this in some way. But you know,
and it's always like really in the conversation about the fucking the pure hypocrisy of the Jew who's trying to run our society of telling us that like we're not allowed to like you shouldn't make judgments on this other culture. It's just a different culture from yours. I'm like, yeah, exactly. That's why I want it on the other side of a wall. Like, I don't want this part of their culture. I find repulsive and I find it silly, and I don't want our culture to adopt it. Like if you're going to take the conservative arguments about assimilation, like they should be leaving this part of their culture behind of just having like high school kids that are pregnant, or in this case, 10-year-old stepdaughter pregnant, and they're not leaving that behind because they're savages. Because the Indio people are just savages. Sure. They're just almost as bad as niggers. They just have a different set of like savage practices, and they're a little bit more family oriented than niggers.
We actually don't have a right to tell them it's wrong.
I do.
What about their cultural practice of driving 110 miles an hour while drinking tequila?
Well, yeah.
Raping a 10-year-old girl.
Do that in El Norte. Don't do that here. I mean, at the very least. No, El Norte is the border region of Mexico.
Oh, I thought that's what they called America.
No, they call the part of Mexico that no one wants to be in El Norte.
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of the transitory, where you're smuggling people in. There's also like, you know, the resort town like shit, like, oh, let's go to Tijuana and like, let's eat Mexican food prepared by Americans in Mexico. Okay.
And Tijuana, like, I don't know. People even go there anymore for fun?
Like, I don't know if they still do it. I know, like, you know, my wife's from Southern California.
Pretty dangerous.
I have no desire to go there.
They have over 100 murders a year there.
I didn't understand what the draw was, but a lot of people, I think it's because, like, you can be underage and drink, which is good when you're around, like, savage rapists and criminal
people.
And drugs and prescription drugs. All kinds of cheap hookers.
Yeah.
I know that I've heard stories about that.
You know, it's funny because I read this story. It's a big story about this Indiana doctor who's now getting censured. The funny thing is, like, conservatives kind of owned themselves on the story because they were directly proven wrong. Yo, yes, it did indeed happen. It was true. And instead of saying, like, well, why are these Beaners that do this in our country? This is why we should close the border and send them back. They're saying, like, well, now we're just going to censor this doctor for breaking patient privacy. Of course, she didn't actually do that. She didn't actually do that. You know who did that was conservatives.
Yeah.
By making a big deal of it and then, like, forcing the story into the public, and then people are looking for a case where a 10-year-old girl was raped, and then they're naturally concluding, oh, this is the same case, and it is. It was. So it's like, so the guy, I don't even think the identity, it's not easy to find it. I'm not looking for it. I don't care what the identity of the girl is. I'm sure she's also a beaner. It's not something I'm interested in finding out. But, like, if somebody did want to find out her identity.
Hey, it's your worst possible nightmare. It's the sound of Borzoi interrupting whatever wonderful talking point Mike is making right now, interrupting your own train of thought. And you're in this position, listening to me right now, well, because you're listening to the free version of this show. You're not even getting all the content, and now you have to listen to me. Is this what you want? Is it really? This is the, you want to hear this? You want to hear me? That just can't possibly be what you want. So if you want to rectify that issue, go to therightstuff.biz/paywall. You can make one-time donations and get 3 months, 6 months, even a year. So why are you doing this to yourself? This has to be especially troubling because I'm not even going to check the audio and how this sounds. So you could also be listening to just terrible audio right now. So why not just stop doing this to yourself and get behind the paywall at therightstuff.biz/paywall?
Like, all the tools are there to do it. I know the courts make an effort to seal juvenile victims and stuff like that, but whatever. Like, the point is that, like, you took a big L.
Yeah.
Publicly, and now you're coping by, like, censoring this doctor, and of course she didn't actually break hip, but whatever. I mean, she's obviously a libtard. She's one of the only two abortion doctors in the state of Indiana. This is the other thing. They've already won. They've won on abortion. Conservatives have significantly won on abortion. In red states, at least.
Do they think the
Beaner... Which was actually the argument they used to make, is let the states decide. That used to be their case, and now the states are deciding, and they don't really have this argument. They don't really have... Mm. And also, people don't really care about it. Now that they've won, people that do care about it, you know, they have to, like, escalate their demands, and the more they do, the more unreasonable they become, and the more people don't care about it. So,
it's like... Cases like this shatter the old, like, conservative debate talking points about abortion, where, like, a liberal would say, well, we need to leave in a, you gotta have an exception for the health of the mother, for rape, and for incest, and then the conservative's like, no, fuck that. That never happens. You're just trying to use that. Basically, every abortion is gonna be one of those things.
Yeah,
that's what you're gonna do.
Argument, yeah.
But now it's like, well, here's a beaner doing typical beaner sex stuff to a 10-year-old.
Well, the point the libtards are making here, and they're frankly, you know, if the debate matters, they're winning it because they're like, no, these things actually happen all the time. Now, as racists, we would say, yeah, these things happen all the time.
It's just, like, that it doesn't happen the way it does like a very special episode of Different Strokes or something. It's like,
right,
it's
right. And to the extent, like, white people do this, they're all working for the FBI.
What was that TV series? It was very famous for being so hard hitting and dark. And it was like a pedophile ring run by, like, the church and the state governments in, like, Louisiana. It's like, no, that's not.
Oh,
what
that
run.
Was like True Detective or whatever.
It's like, oh, that was so gritty. It's like, it's like, no, this is not. These are not the people to do this. I'm sorry.
It was like some weird pagan rape cult.
No,
rape,
it was
pedophile
just,
cult where, like, it was
Southern
like
Baptist.
A retarded son of, like, a senator or something.
They were like, yeah, they're like some kind of crazy, like, evangelical church group. It's like, it had all the American stuff going on that you could possibly want.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It was Jew Detective.
Oh, God. Speaking of which, I finished watching the Waco Aftermath series, the little mini series, because Striker. Oh, my God. The fucking gall on these fucking people. You know what? The last thing you see on screen. A quote from Merrick Garland about white supremacist domestic terror being the greatest threat that our country faces.
Are they, like, owning him, or are they saying that it's true?
No, they're saying that it's true. Because, like I said, the first Waco series really put a fucking fine point on the government is fucking evil and just slaughtered its own people because it wanted to, because it was sick and tired. It was sick and tired of having a standoff on the news. And it was sick and tired of, like, it doesn't want to back down and they won't surrender. So fuck it. We're going to go in there and get them. And having to deal with, they don't want to deal with that, you know? So they're just guilty. They're just an illegitimate, disgusting piece of fucking bunch of pieces of shit that run that government. And so this series was about trying to like soften that by making a moral equivalence between like, okay, Timothy McVeigh, the revenge bombing, trying to pretend like, well, everybody's just wrong. And if we could just get along better as human beings, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
How about we get along better as you're the government and you don't murder your people? And then stuff like Oklahoma City wouldn't have happened. And they're trying. So they made the whole series about how necessary it is to fight white supremacist militia groups because Timothy McVeigh. And then they close.
But hold on, dude. A second. The central narrative though sounded like that was a revenge for Waco. So then how do you spin that into being a white supremacist issue?
Well, because he's part of the Aryan army. Because
Timothy McVeigh had a copy of Pierce's book.
That was the thing. Like
that's
they
the
were
only reason. That is, no, I'm telling you. From just knowledge of history, that's
yeah. Wrong. I know that, but I'm just saying that narratively, that doesn't quite pan out.
Oh, it's stupid! It doesn't stop us saying it.
Yeah, but if you watch the TV show, you're not. If you watch it, you're not one of us. If you think you're just, if you think TV is real, then that's the lesson you're going to learn. Like,
well, that's the other thing is if you don't look into it, you'll just believe it. Because I believe that Timothy McVeigh was a white supremacist until I actually looked into it.
Yeah, they gave you the impression that he's in this Elohim city with these other skinhead people.
That's the problem with the Jewish monopoly. And that's the problem, the big lie. Right. As Hitler said, they tell the big lie and you believe it. And it doesn't even occur to you, well, maybe because this, it doesn't even occur to you, wow, this is such a big thing that I'm just going to believe it because you don't actually go through that mental process.
Yeah.
That's in the back of your mind, or if it's in your mind at all. You just are like, oh, okay. This guy, the bomb, when you're like 19, was it 1996, 1995?
Yeah, something like that.
1993.
I can't remember. No, 93 was when the Waco siege happened, right? It was 95 or 96 when they did the bombing. They did it on, April 19th, the anniversary of the raid. I didn't realize that.
In 1995, the day it happened, I was in high school. I remember hearing about it. I had no tools with which to challenge the narrative that this guy's a white supremacist. Right,
I honestly don't even remember it. Like the day, I don't have a memory of the day it happened being like weeping.
You want to know why I remember? You want to know what I actually do have a distinct memory of in my head?
Okay,
is the day it happened in, or maybe the day after? Talking about it in gym class.
Okay,
gym class. In like literally, like in my gym class. And the reason it was being talked about is there was a Jewish kid. There was a Jewish kid who was saying this is probably an anti-government white extremist. I literally, and I know that sounds like a just so story, like I'm making up, but I actually remember this, where I was saying like, wow, why would anybody do that? Or what's going on with that? Or something like that. And he's saying, well, I'm telling you, it's these anti-government white supremacist militias.
Why are they anti-government? Like the show and the narrative gives you like why these groups exist. It's like, well, because you murdered these people at Waco and they're all really pissed.
Right, right.
Like supposedly that building is where they planned the Waco raid and siege. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what they say.
Probably, yeah.
So he was obviously doing a targeted revenge bit. I doubt that was a coincidence, but I don't know.
Right. I mean,
but you're telling me the whole time that you deserved it, but you're trying to get me to. Now you're throwing Merrick Garland at me, and I'm just like, "Fuck you and fuck that blood Jew." After they show like the injustice of the court case of what they like, the government took the five people that they didn't murder from Waco and put them on trial for conspiracy. They basically got acquitted. They got this is what Stryker mentioned. They got convicted of using an illegal gun in the process of doing a crime, but the crime they got acquitted on. So the lawyer argued, "Well, how can they be guilty of committing a crime they didn't commit?" And the judge like, "You're right. You know what? I'm going to vacate that." And then he comes back the next day and overturns the decision, and he sentences the one nigger to like 40 years. These people get like 5 and 15 years for this gun non-crime. It's like, this is what this government does, and you're telling me, I'm like, am I supposed to feel bad about, I guess because of the kids you feel bad about Oklahoma City? Because there was a daycare center in there? But it killed fewer children than died in Waco, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, okay, but like, I mean,
we're not doing that, but it's
kind of, body like, counts of children tit for tat here. But like, I mean,
but it's just that I see what you're right doing, not, Showtime. Like, you're trying to make up for what happened on the other series. You're trying to, and it doesn't fucking work. It doesn't fucking work to put this outrage on the screen and then try to tie it in with Timothy McVeigh and white supremacy and Merrick Garland. Like, it, if that works on somebody, like, you're fucking stupid, which is what I'm afraid of.
Well, the public, if you think that, like, the thing is, it's like, who started it?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, America started.
Well, and what was really satisfying was all the stuff I hope was real. Like, they had all these situations where this FBI guy got told to his fucking face, like, oh, yeah, you're going to protect me, like those kids at Waco? And then, like, he's
yeah, no, that shit
happened. That shit is great.
It bothered the FBI for a while. Then they,
oh,
they
poor
sort
babies.
Of, they worked really
yet,
hard.
Yet they salute their they salute the sacrifices of the guys who died there every year, though. So I don't know how much it bothers.
Oh, I know. I think I'm saying, but I'm saying for a while in that era, it hurt the FBI's reputation with
right.
conservatives. But they overcame that after a few years, and people forgot, and yeah. now people are remembering again. And the FBI is again like the least popular institution in America.
Right.
Like, and it's so bad now. It is so bad now that, like, and even despite what the media is saying, like these hearings that they had, the Jim Jordan yeah. hearings where they had the FBI whistleblowers, that wasn't good for them.
Yeah.
Now, the media pretended they didn't even exist.
Right.
And they were bringing up all kinds of they're saying, oh, they're not real whistleblowers because, of course, the FBI gets to decide who a real whistleblower is. So they're saying these aren't real whistleblowers. And then they're
well,
taking
what are
the
they
fact
then?
That Kash Patel, who's like somehow connected to Donald Trump.
Are they Vuvuzela buzzers?
Gave...
Oh, you don't like interruptions. Well, this is a different kind of an interruption. This is a pre-recorded interruption to remind you that you wouldn't be hearing this interruption if you would actually pony up, support our work here at TRS, and buy a subscription to the show. It's only $10 a month. Unless you're using like e-checks, then there's some extra fees because the e-checks fucking suck. Don't use those. The point is, we need your support. You can't use credit cards anymore. It's kind of a pain in the balls, but we still need you to help us out. And if you're enjoying the content, these silly commercials will go away. We won't bother you anymore if you just do. So go to therightstuff.biz/paywall, make an order. You can use e-checks. You can mail in a money order. You can use a bunch of different cryptocurrencies, all which suck and are annoying, but we'll get it figured out. Or you can go to my Odyssey channel, Uncle Spen's Other Tone Stream, and you can give me a donation there and send me a screenshot of the transaction. We'll get you figured out. So, yeah. I guess any second now we'll go back to the show. I don't know when because I don't want these to be quick and predictable so that you can't just skip through them to make them go away. So this one's going to be a little extra long. But yeah, you need a subscription. You need a subscription. They're horn blowers?
Gave one of them some money.
Okay.
And the reason that they were given money, now, he gave them $5,000. Okay, so Kash Patel gave $5,000 to Stephen Friend. Now, the reason he did that is because these people are on unpaid leave of absence from the FBI, but the FBI is also legally preventing them from seeking other work, so they have no income. So as a matter of charity, Kash Patel gave $5,000 to Stephen Friend. Now, for them to assert that this $5,000, and first of all, he'd already decided to do this when that happened. So for them to assert that this $5,000 payment is why he did it would be absurd, given that I'm sure an FBI agent makes over
but
six figures a year.
But they'll bald-facedly, they'll just run with that. That'll just be the thing. They'll print
right.
that everywhere.
Like,
they'll
just a charity payment, so this guy could
bowl
probably
you
pay
over.
His bills.
Just bowl you over with it.
No,
this
they,
is why he's
just,
doing
they're
it.
Just saying it, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, without mentioning the fact that, like, why for $5,000 would you give up your – if he's only about money, then just keep your job as an FBI agent because you're going to be – you're probably
making
make
more
over
than $5,000.
One over six figures for sure. You're definitely
making
six figures.
Sure.
Definitely. Probably making $200K maybe,
so,
depending on how high up you are. So, like, what are you talking about? Like, why would somebody give up that job for $5,000 for a one-time $5,000 payment? It doesn't make any fucking sense. It's stupid. Someone making $40,000 wouldn't give up their job for a one-time $5,000 payment unless they were black. But, like, it doesn't make any sense. But what we should look at, I mean, we could do some of that Cockrell stuff we were doing during prep.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We
yeah.
should also look at this U.S. national strategy to counter anti-Semitism that
I wanna,
was published.
Yes, we have to look at that. But just talking about the
this
reputation of the
wild.
FBI in the 90s and when this happened, the really subversive narrative that they want to put in there, which is why the Merrick Garland quote is at the end, they sort of try to give you the impression that because the FBI and the ATF are so embarrassed by what happened with Waco, they're also, you know, they have to live with that every day. They have to live with the fact that their mismanagement of that situation made a bunch of people that they don't know it. Anyway, but the bad press and the fallout from that made it so that FBI had to back off investigating white supremacist extremists, and that's why Oklahoma City was able to happen, because they backed off. We don't want to, it's repeatedly said, we don't want another Waco on our hands. We can't be having a showdown with this Elohim City group who is supposedly planning something. The guy, like the one guy, is like the voice in the wilderness. They're planning something. They're planning something. And his superior is like, well, what do you want us to do? Go there and have another Waco, man? We can't do that. It's not my decision. So the narrative is like, if you had
City never did another fucking thing.
If you had just kept oppressing and shooting at white people in the wilderness, Oklahoma City never would have happened, and we never should have stopped doing that. Basically saying, we shouldn't have stopped doing Wacos. That's sort of the narrative. And so, with Merrick Garland, we're going to do Wacos now. We're going to do Wacos now.
You know what's funny, though? Now. Yeah. Timothy McVeigh thought Elohim City were a bunch of fucking kooks.
Well,
he was right.
They paint the picture that, like, he's from there, and he was doing this. He went and talked with them, and he
did have interactions with them. He thought they were fucking nuts.
Yeah, and they thought...
They were, because they are. Yeah. Like, those people are nuts.
Well, they paint the picture that they sent him to do he was selected and he had to go do it alone. They had this really weird scene where it's
not
like,
true.
You need help, but
it's not true.
The leaders, it makes perfect sense.
Accounts won't tell you.
It makes sense that it's not true because they have like this leader, this guy, Andy the German, is telling him, you cannot do this alone. You need help. He's like, well, I can do it alone. He's like, you need help. No one from here, though. Do you have a friend? And it's like, the next scene is like, he's...
Right, because he actually is Terry Nichols, right?
So, yeah, Terry Nichols. So nobody from Elohim City helped him do that. He went elsewhere. It's really shitty. But, yeah.
It wasn't actually true. Now, I'm not even defending Elohim City because they're legitimately a bunch of fucking kooks. But, well, like, that's what Timothy McVeigh thought, too.
Well, they're sea icebergs.
Here's the thing that drives me nuts about this. Yeah. Sorry to step on anybody, but...
It's okay.
He has a manifesto. Timothy McVeigh has a manifesto. You can read exactly why he did it. It's out there. It exists. It's no fucking mystery. It's not. There's no ambiguity about it.
He wasn't even that Christian. He was a secular anti-government activist for the most part. Activist, whatever. I mean, he did think that was... He generally thought it was...
He's rather active.
But he wasn't like... He wasn't, from my understanding, I mean, maybe I'm remembering it wrong. I'm positive he was not instructed to do it by Elohim City. And they were trying to use that as a way of making people...
Yeah.
And Gore Vidal also had that crazy book with Timothy McVeigh where he became like sympathetic to him. You remember,
here's a quote from the manifesto. He says, whether you wish to admit it or not, when you approve morally of the bombing of foreign targets by the U.S. military, you're approving of acts morally equivalent to the bombing in Oklahoma City. The only difference is that this nation is not going to see any foreign casualties appear on the cover of Newsweek magazine.
Mm.
He's right about that.
I mean,
yeah.
He's right. And he specifically, I think he was specifically referencing, if maybe I'm getting the timeline wrong, the bombing of Sudan. When the Clinton administration bombed Sudan and supposedly they hit a pharmaceutical factory, which was the only one in the country.
I think that was later.
That might have come later.
Yeah, I was looking at this Washington Examiner article, and they actually characterized this as a chilling section that he wrote. It's like, what he said is...
When they say chilling, they mean, I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah, right? It's like, he just kind of BTFO'd you on this one.
It was bombed by the United States on August 20th, 1998, so that was...
Later. Okay, yeah.
Much later.
Okay. That came later.
The Clinton years are so insane. Because
they did all kinds of shit.
Yeah, there's no internet to catch up with it, and no like on the spot like now like when everything's completely insane and there's tons of information right there. Clinton times was like all these atrocities are happening, and it's very limited what you have access to read about it or find out about it. And it's all like, all this shit is like, okay, so 30 years later, we're getting a handle on this one. You know, I've never looked into like all the FUD around Timothy McVeigh either, like the the false flag copes and stuff. But that's probably all just bullshit. And all that stuff.
Oh, that Oklahoma City is fake. So yeah, I never found that shit.
It's a false flag. I'm not even sure.
You've been watching this stuff. Did any of these documentaries or shows, did any of this like shit ever go into Janet Reno? Because I remember the perception of Janet Reno in the 90s. Everybody universally hated that bitch.
Janet Reno had her job up until the end. I remember the final episode of Saturday Night Live of the Clinton years. And they had Janet Reno actually came on and was in a skit alongside Will Ferrell. who used to dress up as her and do his like, I'm Janet Reno bit. Like, they had her on for like a tearful goodbye because the administration was ending. Like, she never lost her job, nothing. And even though, like, I remember this, I mean, this was a big criticism of Clinton, is that Clinton would not accept responsibility for Waco. He would say that was Janet Reno's fault, but she still had her job, as I recall. Maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe Clinton.
No,
maybe,
yeah. I mean, but I'm pretty sure she just kept her job. Go into her. I mean, I'm sure that she must have had a character in the show.
She's not in the show. She's mentioned as making the decision to go ahead with the raid.
Oh, all right. I guess they couldn't find. I guess they didn't want to like step on that rake of like having somebody portray her, because, you know, she was like universally understood as like this really ugly woman, this very mannish ugly woman. And like that would have become a big distraction, actually. Despite themselves, just having a scene with her and having an actress or actor portray her.
Get Will Ferrell. Get Will Ferrell.
I mean, just get Will Ferrell to do it, right? Like, that would have actually been, that would
We've
got to
take these Jesus freaks out.
The entire thing.
Just take them out. I'm tired of this, being on the news every day. Yeah, because I think she was also there, like, for the Elian Gonzalez fucking debacle.
Oh yeah, the conservatives made her. In which case, the one time the U.S. actually wanted to deport a Beaner, and conservatives were like, "No, you can't do it."
Well, of course.
I mean, I'm saying there's no good argument not to send that kid back to Cuba. None, zero. There was zero good arguments not to send that kid back to Cuba.
I don't remember why the conservatives wanted to keep. It was just like, we're going to
own. Because
Cuba
is communist.
We're going to own the libs by keeping a Beaner.
It was because Cuba is communist.
Yeah, I guess that was it.
Because he apparently, what was it? He washed up on the shore with no adults, right? And then his father was still in Cuba. His mother tried to bring him here, died in transit. This is what I believe happened, right?
Yeah, I think that sounds right. And he had like an aunt
and
or somebody
lived
here.
And his father was still in Cuba, wanted him back. And this was a completely reasonable thing for his father to say. And there were supposedly then Cubans in America that were saying, no, he's our relative here. Well, I don't know if they were telling the truth or not.
Oh, my God.
And they're like, he has to stay here because the Cubans are...
Speaking of Saturday Night Live, they had such a field day in the 90s with all this stuff. I remember because the news cycle was like every day you would get like footage of Elian Gonzalez playing in his backyard. Like they were just, you know, taking, and Saturday Night Live did a skit where it's like 20 years later and it's still not resolved. And so they had like Horatio Sanz, this big fat beaner, like playing on a swing set in the backyard.
Funny. That was so good. That's actually funny. See, that's the thing. Like they could do that shit. They could be funny back in the
day. That's because they loved Clinton.
The opposition is literally retarded conservatives. Yeah. You can be funny.
Yeah. Well, it's also just because they love the Clinton administration. Really, so they're not blind. They don't.
This is pretty annoying, huh? All this can go away. You bought a paywall at rightstuff.biz/paywall. You can use crypto, e-checks, mail in a money order, or even use your credit card on Sven's Odyssey channel. The link will be below in the show notes. That's the rightstuff.biz/paywall.
Don't do the cringe they do like with Trump or W because they're not like filled with rage. They're making fun of someone they like, so it's actually like funny and good natured. But God, that was some funny shit,
dude. SNL in the 90s though, they had Daryl Hammond playing President Bill Clinton. It was so fucking great.
Yeah, he was good at that.
He was
really good.
It was always libtarded, and if you go back and look at some of this shit, like you'll cringe at how bad a lot of it is. But that gag is fucking funny.
Yeah,
like he's like. They saw the show footage of him playing ball.
Yeah.
He's like 30 years old. Yeah, that's funny, dude. That
well,
is a
I
good
just
joke.
Remember this
I'm
like
sorry.
This big fat beaner going down like a little yellow slide.
The thing is, think about what's being made fun of there. It's not even like a conservative thing. It was conservatives trying to like co-opt like the tear-jerking, lip-tarted thing of like, you know what I mean? It's actually you could use that kind of thing. I mean, you could do a thing like that to talk about, like, the dreamers, right? Like, help these dreamers who, like, you know, these people who came to America as kids through no fault of their own. They're all, like, 50 years old, right?
Right.
Like, you could do something like that. That, you know, you could do the exact same joke with that. I want to find that sketch now, yeah.
I'm trying. I mean, this is pretty funny. I don't know what set, but this is a funny image. It's like Molly Shannon and Horatio Sands. Oh, God damn. And Chris
Horatio Sands is just fucking funny.
And Chris Kattan. Like, Chris Kattan is fucking Elian Gonzalez. Oh, God.
Well, like, the other thing is, like, they used to do some funny shit right after 9/11, like making fun of Arabs and stuff before it became too politically incorrect to do it. Where they did the one where they had, like,
oh my God,
Robert De Niro come out, and he's like, he's supposed to be the Department of Homeland Security guy, and they're doing all these, like, ridiculous Arab names. He's like, we're tracking them. We're coming after him. He's like, well, what about, what about who's being 14? He's like, well, our agents are on the scent. And it's like so stupid, but it was fucking making me laugh.
Oh my God.
And I was surprised. Even then, I was surprised they were doing it because it was clearly racist. And they had people who had like unfortunate names after like 9/11. And this guy, and then it was Horatio Sands again. He's like, yeah, my name is Al Qaeda.
Al Qaeda.
He's like, yeah, it sucks. So just, you know.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway.
Alien the Cuban Boy. That was the musical number they did. Jesus.
Right. And see, since they're making fun of conservatives, they can pull out all the stops and actually be fucking funny.
They're ignoring conservatives. They're not even making fun of them. They're just having a good time. I don't know.
Oh, they were making fun of
them. Oh, there's the famous photo of, the guys with guns coming to seize Alien Gonzalez through. I remember that.
Well, conservatives did that forever because, like, it was that whole thing, like, oh, they're sending a task force to, like, send a child. How dare they do it? I mean, look, conservatives were completely, yeah.
There's the famous picture.
That's the famous photo. Mm-hmm. They're hiding in the closet.
They were completely in the wrong on that, and they should have turned the boy over, and they should have sent him back to Cuba, like, right away. That was the correct move. His father was in Cuba. There's no reason not to do it. I mean, the only reason conservatives were fighting that was they were like, it's so terrible because it's communism. It's like, who fucking cares, dude? It's not our problem.
Well, like, what's this?
That's where this kid's father is.
Mm. Well, that appears to be an MP5. I might be wrong.
What that is the correct policy being carried out, is what that is.
It's an AP5? It's like a news reporter? Is that a journalist gun? Yeah. It's the AP? Anyway, I don't know how we got on. We're anyway, pretty far flung here.
Because we're talking about that old.
Oh, we're talking about the old, the Clinton years, all that shit.
I just found that there's a cold opening where they bring up the Oklahoma City bombing and Waco and all that. And Janet Reno literally bursts through a door. It's good
stuff. I don't want to watch that because
now she's
making
the hero,
light
right?
of something that I'm actually mad about. So it's not going to be funny to me. So it's going to make me angry.
Then she threatens Wolf Blitzer. Makes fun of his name. Is like, ah, that was back when Wolf Blitzer was still kind of youngish.
Right. Dude, did you ever see? I got to tell you something funny. Wolf Blitzer. Like, I just, for fun, like a few months ago, I was just watching some YouTube videos with Jamie, and this video of like biggest fails of like Celebrity Jeopardy came on. And it was like celebrities on Jeopardy just getting the answers like brutally wrong. And Wolf Blitzer is fucking stupid. Like, he had, like, four or five answers in a row of, like, pretty obvious questions, and he was just blowing them. Like, it was really funny. And he had, like, and then they showed at the end, like, he had, like, a negative score. Like, he went on Celebrity Jeopardy and just got wrecked.
I'll take it. And
Alex Trebek
was
kind of making fun of him because he's like, aren't you supposed to be, like, a news anchor? Like, aren't you supposed to know things?
He's like, well, I read the teleprompter.
teleprompter. If you give me
yeah, he's like, no, I don't know anything.
I'll take the rapists, Alec.
Yeah,
I was about to say.
Yeah. The rapist. Anal bum cover.
But Wolf Blitzer, they didn't even do a good impression of him. That guy doesn't, he's just like deadpan completely. Like, that guy is completely.
Well, no,
this was the
Sean Connery bit they did. Anal bum cover. The rapists. Like, everything was.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. So I guess we want to look at this thing on Bang that I had ready to go. I'm going to talk about. No more Mr. Nisley guy. That's going to be like a song I'm going to have to do. It's too many.
Well, let's talk about, let's do some Cockrell Holocaust.
Some Cockrell stuff. Because Cockrell really is a clod.
He fucked up. I mean, he embarrassed himself, and this is probably about, I mean, I hope he understands what happened. I mean, he probably does, and he's probably seething, but he can't do anything.
But I want to start with this sort of somewhat on topic. This doesn't really have much to, I don't know how much this Bangster was influenced by Cockrell's display on Twitter the other day, or if he's just talking in general. Because also, if you go to Kodo threads, there's like tons of Cockrell threads that he eventually abandons when he finally runs into the detail that he doesn't.
When he finally loses. Yeah. He's famous.
He just leaves. And he did it to me on Twitter. He just left. He left and his buddy made fun of a typo I made or like elsewhere in the thread.
Right. And anyway, his curly lock Jew buddy who, you know, seems to also not get the shot here.
So this bank thread is called Holocaust by Bewilderment. Radicalized Normie is the OP. He says, one thing about the Holocaust that I do find thunderstriking is the complexity. Back when I believed the propaganda, I assumed the Holocaust was so well researched that in any debate, the affirmer would blow the fact checker out of the water 95-5. I understand this fear. That was sort of like going into it like every time. Mm-hmm. Still get this little tinge of like, oh God, am I finally going to like step into a rake here? It wouldn't be a debate. Yeah. It would be a massacre. It would be one person humiliating another. But it isn't. It is usually a battle. And even with the worst Holocaust fact checkers, the affirmer has to fall back on minutiae and obfuscation. And
even with people who aren't good at doing the denying.
I was surprised that I did well at all the other day.
You did great because you're exposed to like the good arguments.
But I don't have
the better argument.
I don't have things like memorized. I just knew in general, like, yeah, no. And any 50-50 debate should be considered a shocking loss for Holocaust affirmers. If the Holocaust is such an unquestioned reality, how can they just not flat out win a debate? This should be pros playing against high schoolers. Show me the orders, the bodies, the ashes, bones, teeth. They can't show anything. The affirmers have created a position that they're unquestionably right, but by engaging in hours-long debates, they have de facto conceded their position is shaky. I would say shaky at best. Nobody debates with flat earthers for more than 3 minutes because that's all it takes. So why can't the affirmers do it in 3 minutes too? And there was a really good response to all this made by Leo.
Well, because if they could, it wouldn't be a debate. If they could just show you the bodies, they could have showed you the bodies or showed you any remains.
I think the point is that they act as if you're nuts.
Yeah.
And that they don't have anything to point to. Like, you're nuts. Look at this. They don't have that. Yeah. It's all like
a lot of Jew stuff is like this.
Right.
Like, almost all of it. It's the same with their narrative on white supremacy being the number one terror threat in America.
Yeah, it's just insane.
Question it, ask them to show evidence, and they'll be casting about saying, well, this beaner, this Indian with the flag, and this beaner at the mall, and these are white supremacists, too.
These two ex-cons, like, shot at each other over some beers and their ex-wife.
Right, like, look at the ADL's list of deaths related to white supremacy every year. There's, like, first of all, there's, like, 20 or 30. Some of them are suicides. Mm. You know, most of them are just criminal meth gang stuff, and that's that.
So there's a good reply in here. Leo replies, it's like you're reading my mind because I've had similar observations about the debate. I don't know if there's a term for this already. I guess Gish Gallop is similar in some respects, but maybe it could be called tactical complexity after tactical nihilism.
Yes. Yes.
Excuse me. Oh, my God. Hold on a second. Wow,
that was
weird.
Tactical complexity is not bad.
It's good. Their favorite approach is to shut down revisionism completely without any discussion and say it isn't worth responding to. At the same time, however, they know the material is out there and the arguments are convincing, so they're in a position where they need to respond, but without admitting that these responses are necessary. Oh, hi, guys. Here's another pre-recorded interruption, not an actual interruption. I'm just here to remind you, we need you to go ahead and pick up a subscription at therightstuff.biz/paywall. You can use money orders, you can use crypto, you can use e-checks, you can even go to my Odyssey channel, Uncle Spend's other tone stream, and you can use your credit card on there to get around the Jews' banishment of our banking services. That works. So you can do that until you can't. I don't know. But thanks. We'll be right back to the show now. Sorry. There is indeed a contradiction here. So what has happened is the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum at all? Do not engage, but you have unofficial blogs like Holocaust Controversies who have tried to fill the void. This is really good. The first thing you notice with Holocaust Controversies is that because it's a blog going back many years, this makes their material difficult to evaluate. Where do you even start? They have some tabs which you think would provide some sort of summary, but if you click, you'll be disappointed. For Auschwitz, they just have a bunch of posts A-logging Matonio, or whatever the term is Sven's been using.
That's true. Yeah. They don't really do anything.
He bolds here. They do not provide any sort of concise and comprehensive presentation of their views. Rather, they're merely trying to make it appear through sheer volume and tediousness of their posts, or tedium, I would say.
And also
that they
snark.
Have debunked revisionism. Yes, yeah, snark and just this. But he's right. It's like sheer volume. There's no simple, like, one page explainer.
No, you can't there's be not. Like. What's the story of the Holocaust and what's the proof? They don't have anything like that. No.
So he links to the Auschwitz page on Hot, and they have this comically long page of evidence. Needless to say, it would require an inordinate time and effort to actually go through all this. You think I'm going to read all that shit by you, nigga?
Well, you could, though. It's been done.
Yeah.
As well.
But his point being, like, the amount of time it takes to evaluate it, like, they don't have a clear, concise, like, smack over the head thing. So what they're doing is tactical complexity. Once they've given up trying to convince you honestly, the only thing left is confuse and create doubt. They imply they have evidence and project extreme confidence and hope this will fool people. Complexity also makes it much easier to lie because everything is hard to check. When people do a document dump like this, they're lying. If they had a strong case, they would select the strongest material, present it in a coherent and readable way. They would have videos like revisionists, yet they don't do this, despite all the resources at their disposal. When I was looking into revisionism, I remember trying to find the best counterarguments to get both sides. It's ridiculous. And I could not believe how hard it was to get the other side of the debate. All you get is this Holocaust controversy sort of stuff. When I have argued directly with some of these types, I've noticed that the most serious ones inevitably resort to this tactical complexity. I've had people try to tell me the crucial evidence is in some obscure book that's impossible to find, or it's in some archive somewhere that's never been published. It's ridiculous. People with good arguments never do this. They do the opposite.
This is exactly
they eliminate,
why.
Hold on. Let me just finish this paragraph. Yeah. They eliminate barriers and difficulties. They simplify. They summarize. They make it as easy as possible for you to see the light. If you cannot convince someone of something if they can't understand, but you can maybe at least keep them on the fence or waste their time.
Right. This is also exactly why I demanded documents.
Right.
Up front for the debate so that this couldn't happen. So we couldn't be in the middle of a conversation. And he says, well, what about this? And he pulls out some random thing from the Nuremberg trials or some random document or testimony I'd never heard of before, you know, deep from the archives to own or something like that. Right.
That's why you're not allowed to do that in court.
Right. That's why in court you can't have surprise shit. Like the other side always has to see what you have. And if you're going to introduce something new, you have to give them time to respond to it. You have to provide it something new. It's not that you can't introduce new stuff. In the debate with me and Cockrell, you can't introduce new stuff. Sorry, Matthew. But you have to ask the judge if you can. He says yes, and then you got to give the other team time to look at it and all that shit, right?
But this was the original dodge of the debate that they did. We tried to get out of it, where they said, "Oh, because of the pandemic, we can't get to the archives."
But again,
they're pretending there was something hidden in the archives. It's like there's just not. And what do they come away with? A book that's in German that no one's ever heard of. That's right. Not going to prove the point. And they tried to do like it's way too much work for you to get this translated and understand what's in it. So I'm just going to ha ha ha. Look what I've got.
Right.
And that's not a debate.
This is what happened. So Matthew kept saying he needed to go to the archive.
One more thing. If there was something in that book that was a fucking knocked the whole thing out of the park, he would be right away. Here's the translation. You can check my translation with a German speaker all you want. This is it. This is the thing. You are BTFO.
Right.
Not like, I guess you don't speak German, huh? That's inconvenient for you.
So he was resorting to tricks from the beginning, and I knew he would, and I tried to set the rules such that he couldn't resort to tricks. His response to my demand for documents up front was to give me documents in German. And he thought that was terribly clever. And you can see threads of him on Roto and I guess now on Twitter or on Kiwi Farms or wherever he hangs out, where he's terribly proud of himself about this trick. But it is a trick, Matthew. It's not honest. And the thing is, he went to the archive to get some pages of Goebbels' diary.
Oh, that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. And now there's nothing in Goebbels' diary that could possibly prove it, no matter what it says, even if I haven't read these passages. I suspect that these are not unique passages or passages that aren't someplace translated into English.
I think they're just pages where he says he doesn't like Jews.
I suspect he did this. Well, there's certain famous passages from Goebbels' diary.
Yeah, I've heard about them.
That are known, that they use against him. Now, I have an answer to those. I have other passages from Goebbels' diaries which show another story. So at the very best, you have with that, you're going to have a wash. You're going to have some stuff where he's saying, yeah, we're treating Jews badly. You have some stuff where he says, well, we have the actual plan after the war is to deport the Jews to Madagascar. He says that in several posts. I have those. I have references to them. If he's going to use Goebbels' diary, I get to use it too. So the thing is, I don't even think he has novel passages. I think he's got the same ones. It doesn't really matter, though, what he's got. Because no matter what, there's an answer. But the point is, he did that in order to get around, because he thought, because look, when the demand was made that documents be produced up front and no surprise documents be produced, there was a thread on Roto where people on his team were telling him, Enoch is trying to trick you and fool you and being unfair. And he's like, he's basically that I was the, my demand was unfair. And there's even some people on that same thread. Cause I remember reading the thread very well, where all the Holocaust affirmers were accusing me of a trick, accusing me of some kind of trick. And then there was somebody that came in and said, well, that seems like, and it's an eminently reasonable, what are you guys talking about? That seems very, you
that
know,
guy just, so that, guy again, that guy doesn't understand the shot. It's like, don't you understand we're all lying here?
Well, the point is that they understand that being held to documents, being held, they understand that being held down to a definite set of claims and documents that, that source those claims, being held down to that is a handicap, extreme handicap for them. It hurts them a lot. They can't, they don't want to be held down to these things. And so me demanding to hold them down to that, they see, because they understand how their argument works, they see it as sort of a dishonest way of me winning by default. Right. Cockerill also saw it that way, because what he did was, rather than say, here are these Goebbels diaries entries, here's an English translation of them, one that's already existing or a new one that he did himself, which apparently he can do it very easily as a German speaker, I guess. He said, no, here's the ones in German. And not only are they in German, they're in their photographs of the handwritten pages of the diary themselves in like cursive German script that I can't then even use auto translation. It's even like it's text that I can drop into like a Google auto translate and use that, as bad as that would be. It's better
I didn't realize the book he got was Goebbels' diary. I thought it was something else.
No, no, he has another thing. He has another book that wasn't in the archive. It's just a German book.
Oh, okay.
It's a German book about demographics.
Yeah, that was the one I was aware of.
What he did was he went and he got some pages, a few pages from Goebbels' diary. And what it is, I'm sure that they're not novel entries. But what he did it so it's – and this is a trick. Okay, this is a trick that he's doing. And he's doing this on purpose to be dishonest, because he knows that if he presents the documents up front – and I have time to research them and go into them, that he will lose. So he got around the upfront requirement for a document by giving me stuff in German, and not only just give me stuff in German, give me stuff in German that I can't drop into, that even I can't just drop into an auto translate, because it's not in a text form. It's in literally a photograph of a page.
I have like I have like thought terminating cliche, though. It's like the diary doesn't put Prussian blue on the walls. The diary doesn't put bodies anywhere. Remains anywhere.
There's no place.
The diary doesn't give.
Here's the thing.
Goebbels could write, like, I hate Jews and I want all of them to die in his diary. It doesn't mean the Holocaust happened. It's not evidence of the Holocaust.
That's true. But the point being, like, if there was these quotes that supposedly proved it,
it's not like
Jewish scholars haven't read this whole thing and been over all of it.
And
they've already cherry picked their favorite bits.
Yeah.
And those are famous,
and
they're well known, and there's well known Holocaust denier answers to them. So my point about it is, it's not about what's even in those quotes. It's about how he tried to use this dishonest trick of presenting me things like, in other words, it's his way of springing surprise documents, even though springing surprise documents are against the rules. And we know this because
this is pretty annoying. You don't want to hear my voice. You want to hear Mike finish his thought, huh? But you can't, because you don't have a subscription. You should go to therightstuff.biz/paywall. Tag it.
He said was, I will provide, when I asked him for the translation, he said, I'll provide the translations when we do the debate, live during the debate. And I was like, no, because why would you even do that, though? Right? Because that then proves that your agenda is to actually spring a document on me, even though I tried to set the rules up so that you couldn't do that. So you're violating the spirit of the rule through what you think is a clever trick that only violates the letter of it. But why then would you translate it at all? Why? Just read it in German. Because people that can't speak German, because his argument was like, if you can't read German, you don't have any place having an opinion on the Holocaust. Fine. then just read the document in German. German speakers get the benefit of it, and us English speakers are just out of luck. What? Why even translate it? Like, if this is your position, if your position is that only people that speak German can have an opinion on this, just like, fine.
And he has
why debate me at all?
And he has
just read the documents in German.
And he has the nerve.
Why tweet? Why are you tweeting in English? Tweet in German.
Well, in English, in, on Twitter, he has the nerve to be like to call names and accuse people of lying. It's like, I feel sad for you that you have to make shit up all day long. I'm like, I don't have to make anything up. All I have to
why
do
did he provide that Miklós Nyízly quote in English? Why didn't he give you the original Hungarian?
That's true. This should be interesting. Well, we can get to Miklós Nyízly. I mean, Nyízly, he just fucking like total like fucking choke slam. You lost, Cockerill. You lost.
Well, I mean, this is
you
funny lost thing about
me.
I can't get over this.
You lost to Sven. Fucking, I don't know anything.
Well, don't count yourself out. We've been doing this long enough. But see, here you had the right approach. Because as he was getting involved in an argument over chemistry, my approach is I'm not going to do the argument over chemistry until you prove to me that you have a reason for even suggesting that these were the conditions.
Right.
Because if you're saying I'm actually not going to debate whether or not spraying down the wall of the gas chamber would or would not prevent Prussian blue until you prove to me that that happened
and
or
you have
any source
to.
that happened. And if you don't, it's moot. It doesn't matter. Maybe it would. Maybe it wouldn't. You know, some people say yes. Some people say no. I would say that's something that needs to be tested, and then we can know for sure. But for sure,
but we need
it
some,
doesn't. It doesn't pertain at all.
We need some testimony
that someone said it.
We need some testimony at least that was happening before the Lichter report was released.
Right.
And there, that doesn't exist. And he tried to assert on Twitter that it did exist. He lied. Then his
wrong.
Buddy said that I was lying because I made fun of him. I was like, oh, you're talking about the Holocaust and you don't like when people make shit up? You're in the wrong business, pal. Like, that was my joke.
Right. There you go.
So then he posts this. He posts the thing that, like, you've been talking about this since every time this debate comes up is, like, using survivor narratives, using Sonder Commando stories. Like, it's very fraught because of the none of them ever are, like, consistent.
They're fucking stupid.
They're not consistent with each other. And when they're not just, like, laugh out loud, wild, stupid claims... they're not consistent. And it's like, this is supposed to be an industrial German killing machine industry that is like, boom, 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 boom. It's a fit. But everywhere you go, and it, depending on what month, the process is totally different. I don't think so. Like, just leaving aside how absurd the entire process is in the first place, how come they don't all report the same shit? They report wildly different shit. So he tried to dunk on me like, there's been testimony about washing the walls for decades before Lichter. And
okay.
when he presented Miklós Nyízly. Miklós, who wrote, he basically, he limited it to like three sentences so we couldn't see what else Nyízly had to say. I have it right here. He basically says that, tangled together, their bodies were covered with bloody scratches with which they caused one another to scramble. They lie with bleeding noses, bleeding mouths. Their heads were swollen and blue, deformed beyond all recognition.
And then they hose them down?
Hold on, I think I started the wrong paragraph. I'm sorry. The bodies do not lie all over the length and breadth of the room, but rather signal story-high heap. A story-high. In a room that's 7.5 feet tall.
So right to the ceiling.
Yeah. The explanation for this
is... So how'd the guy on top get up there?
Well, they climbed over each other to get away from the gas, which was at their feet and rising, I guess.
Okay, I'm going to step over that. Literally step over the gas. Go on.
Yeah, like, I mean, just how do
I'm
you
trying
know
to, hold on. This fucking this ebook reader that I'm using is fucking...
The guy at the top problem is they say that it's blue, and they wouldn't be blue. They'd be
cherry. Oh, they wouldn't be blue. They wouldn't be cherry. Bleeding. Right. They wouldn't be all these things, right? I guess the bleeding is because they were clawing at you, whatever. I mean, this guy's like Clive Barker. Like, this guy... You know, it's what I'm saying. A lot of these people are like they're like aspiring Clive Barkers.
So
when you read Clive Barker, who is a Jew, you understand, like, is he gay? Is he gay or Jewish?
I want to elbow in here real quick because it took me about almost 10 minutes to find this idiot's YouTube channel again. It's amazingly hard to find Cockerill's YouTube channel. I guess it's not promoted because Cockerill doesn't realize what he's doing is actually a problem. But one of the videos in here is labeled "The Errors of Eric Stryker."
This might be kind of fun to A-log, but what I think
I'm kind of wondering what are you saying?
Yeah, it's like, okay.
Is it about the Holocaust?
I'm assuming, because everything on here is about the Holocaust. We could look into that one. But what I think is funny is he posted that video 11 months ago, The Errors of Eric Stryker, part one of the series. And then over here I see on Nazi Apologist, Ryan Falk, part one of three. It's like, are you just shelving the series you were initially going to work on?
Followed up with another part?
Yeah, he didn't follow up another part on that.
That's a classic fucking, like, abandoned amateurist YouTube channel mistake. Like, yeah. If you ever come across these people that think they're going to, like, start a YouTube channel and they just run out of gas because they don't get an audience or they just lose steam after doing a couple of videos, you'll see these kinds of things. And also, these are classic, like, low follower count things. The people that have big YouTube channels, even if they're like promoted channels, they actually put in the work and do a fucking video like every day or every other day. And they do it even past the point where they only have 50 people watching until they get big. And Matthew just doesn't seem to have.
I'm burning with curiosity now. I'm burning curiosity. I want to know about the errors of Eric Stryker.
Okay. First, I want to finish the errors of Matthew
Cockrell.
Okay,
finish your thing.
Matthew Cockrell posted, this is the quote he posted, a very tiny screenshot with no citation. I don't know who wrote it. He didn't say who wrote it. It was this brief, like two or three sentences. And this is what he says is testimony from decades ago about washing the walls of the gas chamber in order to prevent Prussian blue from forming. The Sonder Commando. The Sonder Commando group stands around the mountain of corpses in tall rubber boots and flushes it with powerful streams of water. There is a great need to do this, for the last act of death by asphyxiation and thus death by gas is the release of excrement from the bowels, and the dead are filthy with it.
Oh, I remember this passage.
So we're not washing the walls, we're washing the bodies. This is body wash. Nicholas Nisley's doing body wash. So
I'm washing
as I don't think I have to elaborate on basically when I brought this up, like, he's washing bodies, not the walls. Radio silence, it was over. And his friend moved on to making fun of a typo that I made and deleted and reposted earlier.
Which is meaning you've admitted to losing.
Yeah, you've lost. And so there's no testimony of washing the walls, because the narrative would have to be, because a big part of the narrative is the Germans tried to hide the evidence of their crimes. They blew up this farmhouse. They raised Treblinka to the ground, and they built a farmhouse that looked old, and then they found an old Ukrainian guy to pretend he'd been living there for like generations. That's one of their stories. So the narrative would have to be that the Nazis know, because of all the fumigations they're doing, that this Prussian blue stuff's going to form on the walls. We better make sure that doesn't happen in these homicidal gas chambers. So Sonder Commando, like, your job is to go in there and wash the walls specifically so that the blue doesn't form. And nobody says that until Joseph Sokar, who also doesn't know any stuff, because he doesn't say water. He says a powerful substance.
He says a special chemical. He says a special chemical.
Which is, well, I guess water is a special chemical.
Well, it's not. And if you try and do that shit, if somebody comes to me, if I say, well, the only testimony I can find about washing the walls comes from Joseph Sokar, and he says they washed them with a special chemical, and you say, well, water's a chemical, I'm going to say, fuck you. Because nobody in the history of the world calls water a chemical in that context.
It is technically a solvent.
Sure.
Well, whatever. Like, again, you understand my point, though. Like, we're not talking about...
Why would you go to the trouble of erasing all of this stuff, though? Like,
well, the reason that Joseph Sokar came out with that testimony is because I'd have to look again at the exact year. It's actually confusing because, again, like everything, it's confusing. It's not clear what year Joseph Sokar first said it, because the book was published
in the
90s, in the early 2000s. Oh. But the testimony is like older than that.
The testimony that I saw was from 93.
Supposedly says his claim is that it was the late 80s when he decided to do it. And no matter what, his decision to come out and give testimony.
If you're hearing my voice right now, something has gone terribly, terribly wrong. Unless this is just how you want to live, who am I to tell people to stop listening to free content that's constantly interrupted, that has to deal with my voice and whatever audio quality this is going to come out in? Who am I to tell people that they should be getting behind the paywall at therightstuff.biz/paywall? Especially if they're not white, which I assume that's what you probably are if you're hearing my voice right now. That's just my assumption. It could be wrong, but I mean, if you're not white, legally you do have to tell me that you're not white. This is I told Sven that I'd record some commercials for him, and at first I thought I was going to put some effort into it, but then I realized, why don't I just ramble in the dumbest way possible and force you to listen to it? Because that's what you're doing right now. You are listening to this. Mike was probably saying something very interesting, something very insightful, and now you're listening to me. Is this really what you want? Is this how you want to live? Do you want to be non-white? Because again, I just assume that's what you are. You could always fix that. You could rectify this problem by going to therightstuff.biz/paywall and getting yourself a subscription, and then you'll never have to hear me again, you know, unless I'm filling it or something.
Simone does seem to be reaction to the Leuchter report because he specifically includes a story about Washington Walls. But in his mind, now remember, he's lying. In his mind, well, how would we make it so blue doesn't show up in the walls? Well, we need a special chemical.
Right.
That would probably involve a retcon. Yeah, I'm retconning why there's no blue on the walls. Well, there's a special chemical because he doesn't know anything either.
One of these central ideas, though, like the idea that Germans were losing the war, so they were trying to hide evidence of the Holocaust. So you expect me to believe that the German officers and soldiers are being told that they were losing and they needed to get rid of evidence?
They weren't losing it in the years when they were supposedly doing the gassings at Auschwitz.
Right.
Which is 1942.
And also, 43. Are you really going to do that with your soldiers? Tell them, hey, we're losing. We got to hide the evidence now. I call bullshit on that. I call total fucking bullshit.
Right. I mean, remember, the reason why we don't have the mass numbers of mass graves on the Eastern Front in Poland and parts of the Baltics and Belarus and even Russia. The reason we don't have these huge numbers of mass graves that would be there and they say are there, the reason they're not been discovered is because it's some unit number
unit
supposedly went around with a bone grinding machine and dug these bodies up and ground the bones, and this was done.
Where's the machine?
They were doing this as the Soviets were advancing and pushing the front all the way to fucking Berlin.
Because they were so uniquely evil.
They had but how are you doing the front lines? Where you're doing it behind the Soviet lines?
Like, yes, fueled by hatred.
They were fueled by hatred. They were an abomination against God. In the nick of time. And now there's this priest. His name is Patrick Desbois, or Patrick Dubois, or Dubois, or whatever.
You and me, Patrick Dubois,
whatever you want to call it. He's a French Catholic priest who has made it his job to now his job is to find evidence of supposed Russian atrocities in Ukraine. But before that, he was going into Ukraine. Because this is the location of supposedly many of these, you know, Holocaust by bullet atrocities. And he was basically, his methodology was this. Go to a village, find somebody in that village that will tell you, yes, there was a Nazi atrocity perpetrated near our village. And then have them tell you where it was and then document that as a mass grave. And claim this is a documented mass grave. That's his methodology. They don't go. Sometimes he says they go and they check the location. According to Desbois's own words, I found an article about how he's now moved from documenting the Holocaust to documenting like Russian atrocities. And the methodology is the same. Go and find a Ukrainian that will tell you and then mark it down in your book as true. And he even says regarding the Holocaust, when we go to the locations pointed out by the villagers, there's usually nothing there.
And digging would be disrespectful. And this is how...
Well, no, you wouldn't find anything because they already dug it up and ground the bones.
This is how the Holocaust is the most documented event in history because this is the kind of documentation. It's done.
And so funny, in Cockrell's document dump that he gave me, he has an argument that he makes about how like the lack of mass graves can't be an argument that there aren't any because here's examples of mass graves that existed that are from the World War II era that were found 40, sometimes 50 years later. The problem is every one of these mass graves is a mass grave of a Soviet atrocity, a documented Soviet atrocity. And so I'm like, okay, fair enough. Look, I'll grant you. Yes, you could find a mass grave 40 or 50 years later. I will grant that premise. I'm sure it's true.
Now
you'll probably find
it.
One 1,000 years later, right? And if you have one, you're going to have remains. Bones don't disintegrate immediately. But You don't have one as of yet from the Holocaust. I just want to make that clear.
Shit. Like,
theoretically, you could find a mass grave. Yes, I will grant that. However, you haven't. Just to this be clear, you haven't found one, right?
This is like Holocaust of the Gaps.
Yes, it is. It is. They're saying we could find a mass grave of Jews killed by Nazis in the Holocaust by bullets. We could maybe find one because we found mass graves years after the fact. Yeah, of course you could always find a mass grave. No one deny. I'm not going to deny that. I'm not saying it's like literally impossible. I'm just saying you haven't. I'm just saying you haven't. And you would, if you're going to be honest with me, you will also have to say you haven't because every fucking example you gave me in your own documentation was a Soviet one. And the funniest thing was he even says that when dealing with the Katyn massacre, which the Nazis documented, which was a Soviet massacre of Polish army officers, he says that their report on this, which is actually internationally recognized and was internationally recognized at the time as being true and accurate because they specifically brought in neutral Swiss investigators to look at it, he says that that is spurgy. I'm not joking. In the documents that Matthew Cockerill left for me, he says the Nazi report on the massacre of the Katyn Forest, which was the Soviet massacre of 4,000 Polish army officers, well documented, and the Nazis documented it so well because they knew they were going to be blamed if they didn't do this. He says this report is spurgy. It is spurgy.
Is that a descriptor that historians use whenever they're characterizing
That is how you know this guy is a high quality academic historian. Oh, this Nazi report is spurgy.
I was reading The Fall of the Roman Republic, and he referred to the spurginess of the centurions.
Well, you want to talk about a spurgy book? I mean, geez, that is, you know, actually, that's a great book. That book is not spurgy. That book reads like fine literature. It's like, a great read. Actually.
Do you want to hear some more Naizley stuff that Cockerill failed to share with us? He didn't share this with the class.
Yeah.
So in Naizley's version of the Holocaust, we don't need Abraham Bamba. He's not giving people haircuts to calm them down. They cut the hair.
Well, Abraham Bamba, in fairness.
Uh-oh. Show's over? What did you say? You froze up on me. Abraham Bamba what?
I said, in fairness, Bamba was at Treblinka, or claims to have been at Treblinka.
Okay. Well, I gotta go. Why is the mechanized killing machine of the German Final Solution, why is it different everywhere? Anyway.
Yeah, that's another thing.
We don't shave the heads till after they're dead in this one. After they've been dead and we've washed the bodies. Presumably you shave their head while the hair's wet, which if anyone's ever shaved somebody's head with maybe they didn't have clippers. I guess they were just going at it with wet hair. I don't know.
I think they had clippers back in the day. I mean, people had buzz cuts. They must have had clippers.
If you had electric clippers, you wouldn't want wet hair. That's hard. I guess, but they could have just been scalping them like Indians anyway.
They're using a straight razor? That's hard,
maybe.
Too.
Then follows the new phase in the exploitation of the Jews' corpses. The Third Reich has already seized their clothing, their shoes. Hair is a valuable material, too. It is essential for delayed-action bombs, as hair is a fiber which expands and contracts uniformly in both dry and humid air. This capacity is brought on to bear the detonator mechanisms of the bombs, so the dead are shorn.
Is that fucking true?
I have never heard of anything like that in my life. This is one of those things like, this is so wacky, maybe, I wonder if that is, but there. So the Germans were making delayed-action bombs out of human hair. And they were getting
I just want to know if this is true. Like, again, my question is, do you have evidence? Okay, so there's this claim, right? I'm not going to evaluate, can hair be used this way?
Where is this done?
The Germans
were they doing?
Building these type of bombs. Do you have proof?
This strikes me
from
as
some other source.
This strikes me
German
as
German factories or
this strikes
munitions
me as,
that were found later.
This strikes me as one of those things that they just made up to try to reconcile why heads were shaved. And it can't just be the mundanity of, it's because of lice. It's like, no, it has to be some crazy evil thing that only wild Germans would do to the Jews. It's one of those things like, oh, they're using it to make mattresses. Like, no one's going to lay out a mattress made of Jew hair. No one's going to.
It's just crazy.
It's like one of these, like, this is like an early, like, ghetto peasant Jew or whatever the fuck he is. He's not very intelligent and he has to make up a story. And it's got to punch it up a little bit, make it scary.
If I do a search
for hair used in detonators, the Niazali thing shows up.
That's the only thing you get, right?
That's the only thing I get. So, and I'm sitting here like, now, are we talking about you're using the hair as a wire?
Well, Spectre commented in chat, like, oh, it's for the hair triggers.
That's what I mean by hair trigger, right? Yeah.
I almost feel like maybe Crosshair's literally used hair at some point, but... Hence the term crosshair.
Well, I think that hair is not literally always a hair. Oftentimes, crosshair means it's a very thin line. It's a hair's breadth, a hair's width. You use these metaphor a lot, right? But the thing is, and the crosshair seems to be two thin lines that cross, you know, for your target or whatever.
Wait, what? Mike was going to say what? Did we all miss that? Is that because this is the Free Fag Edition? Go to therightstuff.biz/paywall. For your subscription today.
I don't know. Maybe in an ancient like crossbow or something like that. I don't fucking know. But here's the thing. Shit. Okay, so they did find human bags of human hair. I think it was at Treblinka or at one of these places.
Oh.
And clearly what that was, though, was refuse cleaned up from shaving the heads because of lice.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because... the shaving of the head...
That's why the Zyklon D was there, for the lice.
Pretty clearly true, because we also have photographs of people with shaven heads. And the Occam's razor here is lice. The Germans shaved the heads because of the lice, because of the typhus. That all fits together, right? That's a very easy way. Like, everything that you see is easily explicable by lice, typhus, all of these things. Like, everything that you actually see in the concentration camps. In other words, if you stumbled upon, if you had no reference to any of these testimonies about gas chambers, and you stumbled upon these buildings, and you stumbled upon the documents provided by the Nazis about the camps, and you stumbled upon the photographs of the inmates, even some of the photographs of the piles of dead bodies, you would not come to the conclusion these people were being gassed to death. Your conclusion would be these were work camps suffering from a typhus outbreak. And they were taking steps to avoid that, to minimize that. And so the reason Niazali says that is because he needs an explanation for the hair that isn't typhus. Later on, they actually, I think, started confessing that it was, that it even was. But if they acknowledge typhus at all, they use it, oh, this was the excuse used for this or that, right? It's like, well, there's actually documented Nazis, SS men and Nazis, and even doctors, German doctors, documented having died of typhus in Auschwitz. There's documentation of that. So... again, it's just like when you're asking me to believe this absurdity, and the fact is, Cockrell needs to salvage something from Niazali, right? And Prasak, in his book, in Prasak's book, in The Technique and Operation of the Gas Chambers, Prasak says Niazali is the best witness. But I want everyone to understand,
shall I continue with Niazali's expert witness testimony?
But let me just one thing.
Okay.
When we do our spooky Holocaust special every year, I go to the well with Niazali constantly.
Yep.
That's like one of my main sources for these stories, because he's got so many fucking... he's the source of the Polish workers ate the Jew in the cook pot. He's the source of the mussels were jumping around in the buckets after people were already dead. He all this shit, right? So anyway, we got more. Let's do it.
Yeah. This is just basically like ridiculous numbers and things, typical shit that's easily debunked. And so drag the bodies of the dead, still slippery with water from the body wash, to the elevators in the next room. He says four large mechanical freight elevators are in operation here. Where is
in one?
Didn't they have a little like lift that was like a, you could put like three bodies on and.
It had what's called a corpse lift. It wasn't an elevator. It was a lift that was operated with a mechanical lever, where it's like a bed. It's like a flat bed, and it's on like a spinning thing. So you spin it. It's on a hinge, though. So as it goes up, it stays flat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So as you spin it, you just spin it up one story.
But he says
it can probably bear about 600 pounds of weight top, and then you need people to manually
crank it. So he's talking about four large mechanical freight elevators are in operation here. They pile the dead onto these 20, 25 to an elevator. It's just like an alarm bell informs the operator that it can ascend. The elevator stops at the cremation hall of the crematorium, where its massive doors open automatically, like on the Death Star or something. The towing commando is waiting for it there. Once again, loops around the wrists, and they drag them along the concrete floor, blah, 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 blah. 15 furnaces. When's the next one? So we skip ahead.
He's wrong about that. There's three furnaces and 15 muffles.
After the last gold tooth is out of the mouth of its dead owner, the corpses... The corpses go to the cremation commando. These then place them three at a time on a pushing device made of steel plates. The furnace's heavy iron doors open automatically. This is Crema 2 Class D. It's the Galaxy Class Crematorium. The doors are all opening like you use the use the rapid lift or whatever the hell they call it to get over there.
Yeah, they all open with the Star Trek sound too.
So where was I? Moving iron. The furnace doors, heavy doors, open automatically. The device moving an iron wheel rolls into the glowing furnace, drops its load, slides back, heated to incandescence. Two men with rubber hoses douse it with powerful streams of water. What do they douse? Oh, I guess
to cool off the thing. Is that done?
I had no idea.
Actually question somebody who has worked in one of these crematoriums. Like, do you do that? Is that necessary? One, when you push in and pull out, is it hot enough that already the steel rods on the body insertion device are glowing? And is it necessary to douse it with water? Couldn't you potentially warp the metal by doing that?
Yeah, that's what I would be thinking.
Isn't that a problem?
And this is where it gets really good. The bodies of the dead are reduced to ashes in 20 minutes. Right. Now, this translation is different. I'm reading Metonio's translation. The other translation, like the official one you can buy on Amazon and shit, like that one was even gayer and dumber because it said that three bodies at a time would go into one oven and it would take 20 minutes to reduce three bodies to ash. That was the other translation that I read. This is less damning. This means the cremation of 5,000 people a day. Four crematoria are in operation, the same capacity. Altogether, 20,000 people pass each day through the gas chambers and from there into the cremation furnaces, which is just ridiculous. I doubt it.
Given that the other issue is we know from documentation when the various crematoria were in operation, and we also know that one of them, because we have cremas 2 and 3, which were the crematoria had three furnaces, 15 muffles each, and cremas 4 and 5 had I believe it was two furnaces with 8 muffle each ovens, right?
Those were always damaged. Those were always down. Weren't 4 and 5 not working?
No. I think they each had. Correct me if I'm wrong. I have to check this again. I think they each had one. That was one furnace with 8 muffle oven.
I don't remember.
So the total number is 40. I know that the total number is 46 in terms of openings, which would be right because then it would be 30 for Crema 2 and 3 and 16 for 4 and 5. However, I think it was either 4 or 5. Broke down almost immediately upon construction and was never repaired.
Right.
So that one was actually never functional for more than like a few days. So then we're reduced to 38. And the other one wasn't used very much. And we know about the status of these because we actually have the Auschwitz Construction Office documents on this. So I'd have to go back and look at it to refresh my memory on this. But I believe it was we had 6 5 muffle furnaces and 2 8 muffle furnaces.
Yeah.
For a total of 46 muffles. But they were also constructed at different times. So the 4 and 5 were actually constructed later than 2 and 3. And they never really went into full operation either. And one of them broke down right away and was never repaired. So there's that.
Yeah.
And in terms of Auschwitz 1, Crema 1, which is in Auschwitz 1, not in Birkenau, they don't even allege but 10,000 people were gassed and burned there anymore. That's the current number.
Yeah, that was...
They continue to reduce it, so now they say, oh, only 10,000 people were gassed here. That's the gas chamber you see, by the way.
Yeah.
That's the one on the tour. You don't go to Birkenau. You can go to Birkenau, but they don't give you a tour of the gas chambers at Birkenau. They don't give you a tour of anything at Birkenau.
Birkenau, the gas chambers are rubble, aren't they? Isn't that where...
Yes, they were blown up. Yeah. I think four and five are gone totally, and two and three are caved in, literally caved in
heads. That's where you see the pictures of where they tried to knock holes through the roof to make it look like there were holes in the roof at the time, stuff like that, right? Isn't that what
they've examined the rubble and found no place where an actual roof hole would have been, and they try and take natural...
Oh, he describes...
Hey, everybody. Jordan Peterson here. I wrote a book about 12 rules for how to live your life, and I have a 13th rule for you. Subscribe to TRS. Go to therightstuff.biz/paywall and pick the payment option that best suits your needs.
Try and take the natural crumble pattern and say, well, this is where the hole would have been, even though that hole, the one that's most famous, has... What really happened is the most famous hole, they say, because it kind of looks like it might form a square. The problem is there's rebar.
And it's been bent back.
That's going across it. It's been bent back.
It's been done after the fact.
And I'm like, that was absolutely done after. Or maybe it was done during the explosion, but it doesn't matter because if you have rebar, that means there was concrete there.
Yeah.
I don't need to explain. Everyone gets it.
He also gets the columns wrong in here somewhere, but I can't find it. He describes them as pipes with holes poked in them.
Look. There's something,
but it's like they're mesh sheeting columns. They're not pipes with holes poked in them.
Right. But here's what I'll say about this. So there are certain things that are said by some of these witnesses where they would say if Rudolf Verba says, okay, the mesh column was a 12-foot by 12-foot column. And then Henrik Tauber says it was 10 inch by 10 inch. That's something I could say if someone's nitpicking over that. As a Holocaust affirmer, you could legitimately say, okay, that's a kind of a minuscule enough difference over this you're legitimately now just nitpicking little minutiae if that's your source of
it.
And this is what they pretend.
Right.
The problem is we're not talking about differences in minutiae of measurements of a column. We're talking about drastic differences in the entire description of the process. And you can't say that somebody who claims that they worked day in and day out in this place is just making a minor mistake. Instead of saying a foot, they said 10 inches or something like that, right? That it's not a minor thing. When the whole description of the process is different from another guy who says he worked in the same place at the same time, and you never mention knowing each other, because that's the other thing. Philip Mueller was supposedly there at the same time as Miklos Niedzielski. The two of them never mention each other. Why did they never mention each other? Did they not see each other? And their descriptions are different, although sometimes they're the same, but it's also clear that they're plagiarizing from each other.
Right.
But it's like if you're – does somebody who works in a factory – and part of the process they do in that factory is a chemical wash. Do they not know what the chemical is?
Right.
Do they not know the kind of protection they wear every day?
This is what
engage in that? Like, get the fuck out.
I found what I was looking for here. They don gas masks. They lift the chimney cover. It, too, is made of concrete. They punch open the patented top of one of the canisters and pour the contents, a substance consisting of bean-sized lilac-colored granules, into the opening. The material poured out is cyclone, or chlorine in granular form. It immediately gives off gas as soon as it comes in contact with the air. It falls down into the perforated sheet metal pipes. No. That's not the story they go with anymore. It is not perforated sheet metal. It's mesh. It's a steel wired mesh that everyone describes this. And if you're telling me you're in there every day washing bodies, and you cannot give the accepted description of these so-called columns that didn't exist, fuck off. It's just wrong. It's not nitpicking. It's just another complete inconsistency where somebody was told via telephone what they were supposed to say, and fucked it up.
It's clear that there's a telephone game going on. If you actually analyze these testimonies, it's clear that there's a bit of a telephone game and playing catch up and people adjusting their narratives. And you know what's funny? Most of the narratives that they have documented, because they've got thousands of hours of interviews with Jews that say that they were victims of the Holocaust and they were survivors of the Holocaust. The Yad Vashem and the U.S. Holocaust Memorial, they have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of hours of these interviews with these Jews that were, and almost none of them talk about being gassed. Well, obviously, because they're survivors, right? But most of them talk about how, what the conditions were on the train while they were being deported. That's like the vast majority of them talk about how, like, oh, in our village, people started hating Jews. Then one day somebody came and put us on a train. That's like the vast majority of what their testimonies are.
Yeah.
And there's some that are like, then you get some that actually go, that are crazy, and you'll find, and they oftentimes the deniers like to go through these and find stuff. Now you can't look at it anymore because they've done this, where they find some crazy old Jewish broad is like, I was gassed three times and I live. And you'll still see headlines because they can't ever question these people.
I ducked down in the corner.
Really, and miraculously, like, gassed five times.
I ducked
times
in the corner and I went like this. I went like this with my hands. And so I didn't breathe the gas in, so I survived. And then I played dead.
There's the one where they're like, you know, I was in the gas chamber, and then we were in there, and we were all sitting on the floor, and they told, suddenly the Nazis tell us all to get out, and I guess the gas just wasn't working that day. I'm like, or you were just being deloused.
Yeah.
So you went into the chamber, whatever happened, you got deloused, and then you were told to leave.
Wasn't that the midgets, and they were all in a sauna? Isn't that where the sauna commando joke came from?
Oh, I forgot about the midgets.
Yeah, that's what I referred to in Smells Like Bitter Almonds, the sauna commandos. Because they were just like, they're in a sauna and they try to pretend like
dude, this shit gets so... Yeah, I think the midgets are...
The midgets are
mentioned in Niasley's book, too. He talks about the midgets, too, if I'm not mistaken.
So, I forgot to finish this bang post. We're like at the end of the first hour. Anyway, I'll just read it real quick because... let's see. So he quotes the OP, but it isn't. It's usually a battle. Even with the worst Holocaust fact checkers, the affirmer has to fall back on minutiae. An obfuscation in any 50-50 debate can be considered a shocking loss for the affirmers. And now Leo continues after that. Indeed, this should be an utterly trivial issue. Did the German state execute nearly all the Jews in Europe aside from Russia and Western Europe during World War II? How could there be significant doubt about this one way or the other? At some point in the future, I predict people will marvel at the amount of ink that was spilled over this. Any uncertainty is only because Jews have been putting their thumb on the scale. The affirmer side, has a number of major advantages. First, their side obviously has a huge advantage in terms of resources, funding, media, etc. This is similar to how spending a lot of money can give you a huge boost in court. Revisionists do not have preferential access to archives, if at all. It's hard for revisionist orgs to operate, see Castle Hill. They have few platforms available, limited ability to raise funds or sell books. The revisionist advantage is simply being right. There's another slight advantage in that it is generally easy to critique or mock things, and revisionists are assuming this sort of critical role. This is why anti-revisionists prefer to critique or analog revisionists themselves instead of presenting a compelling positive case. Secondly, there's a long-established and overwhelming presumption of German guilt. That is to say, people generally assume it's true, and many documents that are objectively speaking vague and ambiguous are interpreted by most people as proof of the Holocaust. For instance, speeches talking about annihilating the Jews or a document referencing a gas-tight door. A related point is that from what I have seen, a relatively new revisionist with only basic knowledge is generally able to demolish a Holocaust believer with similar level of knowledge. There is a natural mismatch. After a few months of research, you can be at the point where only PhDs have any hope of handling you, and they try to win by gish-galloping with obscure sources and doing hyper-correct, well-actually stuff. Then he quotes the OP again. The affirmers have created a position they are unquestionably right, but by engaging in hours-long debates, they have de facto conceded their position is shaky. And he says, this is precisely why the establishment organs do not do this. They see the trap. They can't allow any critical discussion of it because once the ball starts rolling, they don't have any way to stop it. The public is to accept the pronouncements of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum and other official sources. If any changes are to be made, this is done quietly by the appointed high priests behind closed doors. And that's the end of that post, which I thought was excellent.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And that's why Cockerill is actually fucking up big time. And he's only doing it for his own clout and ego. and Jews don't want to do this. That's why Dr. Abbey cut out and why he's not helping. I would say, Matthew, if you want to help the Jews, you should shut your mouth because they don't want to do this. Now, Holocaust controversies was mentioned earlier. They don't like Holocaust controversies either. In fact, official Holocaust museums have denounced them and they call them trolls and they say they're bad faith trolls. And one of the reasons is because they actually have trolled Holocaust, other Holocaust affirmers for conceding things.
Mm-hmm.
Like when the official Holocaust narrative affirmers have quietly conceded something and changed something, Holocaust controversies attacks them.
Yeah.
And it's like, bro, you're not supposed to draw attention to this shit.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to talk about it at all. I mean, we got into it with Holocaust controversies over that whole – remember that thing, the Frank Grischk report?
Yes.
Which was that report which supposedly like told the whole story of the gas chambers, which was supposedly a Nazi report. And as it turns out, it was just some typed pages with no identifying markers on it at all that were just asserted in the Nuremberg documents to have been something that was this report.
Oh, hi. Here's another interruption that's pre-recorded. Go to therightstuff.biz/paywall and pay for a subscription. We need your support. We need your help. We can't do this for free because we're Jews. Yeah, that that was something I read about. Like Nuremberg, a lot of the documents at Nuremberg were just typed up by American and French, whatever.
They had this rule where they said all they had to do was attach a signed affidavit that, to their knowledge, this document is true and correct, or is a copy of a true and correct.
That was generally
document.
What it was. It was they alleged a lot of these things were copies. These were official copies.
Yeah,
they were stamped
as
such.
This is a true and correct copy.
It's like, so where's the original?
I assert that it is. Boom.
We don't know where the original is.
And that's it, right? And the original is not to be found. Now, the funny thing about the Frank Grischk report is there is an original Frank Grischk report. It was a report given by him upon his tour of the concentration camps.
Hmm.
And you can find it. It's been translated into English even. And it makes no mention of anything about gassing.
Right.
And they say that this, then what their
coded
was,
language.
Well, it's not the coded language. It's saying this report, which doesn't use coded language, which openly talks about gassing Jews, it was a secret appendix only meant for German high command. And we found it later. I'm like, yeah, see, I just think you're lying.
Yeah, it's.
I think you're lying. I just don't think that's true. There's no evidence of it being true. No. There's simply this. And the funny thing is they never even presented it at Nuremberg. It was simply something that was hidden away in the piles of documents from the Nuremberg trial that was never really presented. And somebody later on found it and they said, okay, we found it. And Holocaust controversies came and they're like, we found the original Frank Grischk report, and they showed, and it was literally two pages of typewritten stuff, and it proved nothing. It had no identifying markers on it. It had no dates. It had no signatures. It had nothing. And their response to my thing of saying there's no signature was to say, a carbon copy doesn't have a signature.
Bullshit, it doesn't. Of course it does.
The whole point of a carbon copy is that the signature is carbon copied.
Like,
fuck you. And
I feel sad
for
you, Cockrell, that you have to make things up all the time.
I mean, Cockrell didn't even say this. This was a Holocaust controversy.
Well, either way, it's like, this goes to all of them.
This was their response to me.
Well, this was all of them. It's like, I feel bad for you. You have to make shit up like that. And lie, and lie to whoever the audience is. And you're not helping. Not helping the case.
Yeah, and because people today don't really know what a carbon copy is because you don't see them carbon because everything's electronic and you don't have the carbon copy credit card machines anymore. Remember when you used to go to the when your mom was going to the department store and checking out and they do the carbon copy of the
go to Caldor,
the card and then you have to sign the slip.
She's at Caldor's or at maybe Ames or what's the other one? James Way. You're James Way.
J.C. Penney.
Well, J.C. Penney's still around. James Way and Caldor, they're long gone.
Kmart.
All right.
But just anywhere you use a credit card back in the day, they did that shit. But now nobody knows what a carbon copy, so you can lie.
That's why
they don't have signatures on carbon copy. What are you talking about?
That's what the carbon copy is for, to capture all that shit.
Somebody signed it.
If there's no signature on the carbon copy, that means nobody signed the original either. Dipshit.
Yeah. Or if they signed the original without the carbon paper underneath, then that's just stupid.
It didn't happen. That means that document doesn't count.
Yeah, that document doesn't fucking
it doesn't count.
Right.
No. Anyway, let's take a break. It's been an hour and a half. This is the free hour, so Cockrell will have an opportunity to be like bask in the glow of getting attention from Mike Enoch.
Oh, I don't care.
We got to cover the errors of Eric Stryker. I'm burning to know.
Well, I was hoping to preview that. I don't want to give this guy more fucking like spotlight than he needs because I don't know.
Also discussing on the forum.
Oh, are they? Oh, cool. All right. Well, let's take a break.
You are discussing the errors of Eric Stryker?
Yeah, we're getting a lot of memes out of this.
Oh, good.
Okay, good. Good.
All right, we'll be back momentarily. No Merchant Minute today. Morikawa has been held up.
You are listening to the Daily Sowa.